I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. This month, News and Notes is focusing on issues surrounding criminal justice. On Thursday, we'll take a look at what it takes to get a fair trial, and today we'll look at this issue from the perspective of the judge's bench. African Americans are much more likely than whites to end up as defendants in the criminal justice system, but less likely to become judges. The most recent study showed that African Americans account for just 4% of judges nationwide. Today, Judge Lynn Toler gives us her take on how this affects the legal system. She's a former municipal court judge who now presides over TV's divorce court, and she's also a regular News and Notes contributor. Hi, Judge. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. So, you know, first off, at least in theory and in hope, judges are supposed to be unbiased. So why would race even be an issue?
Judges are supposed to be unbiased, and we all say that, and any judge worth their salt will say, I don't have any prejudices and biases. But in truth, we're all human, and there's nothing about donning that black robe that all of a sudden eliminates likes, dislikes, predilections, prejudices, and all those complex emotions that you have. So if you have a judiciary that is solely of one type, you're going to have a culture. Everything has a culture. Your community has a culture. Corporations have a culture. And if you are not exposed to, understanding of, and ingrained with other cultures, your culture is not going to understand that. So despite your best efforts to be non-biased, biases will creep in about which you are not aware.
Give us a sense of your path into the black robes, because 4%, considering that black folks are 13% of the U.S. population, 4% is a pretty sad showing.
Yes, it is. We have difficulty on a number of levels. First, we're always from a step behind, not as many people in the legal profession. Once we get into the legal profession, in states where there are elections, there are difficulty in one, it costs money depending on the size of the community that you're seeking a judgeship in. It costs a fair amount of money to get in there and to get elected. The way I got elected was I happened to be a rare commodity. There was a judgeship where 9 people were running in the race. I happened to be the only black person in the race, and my community was 40 to 45% black. I was told by the black leaders in the community that I would have no chance to vote, to be elected, because the black votership typically did not come out in numbers. We did a lot to change that in my race, and I only won by 6 votes. But So you're fighting several levels of difficulty, especially when you're elected. Now, there are other communities that have merit systems, and some of them, merit systems are good, but that merit system does have to be dedicated to the idea of diversity. Believe in it, understand it, and nominate people with that in mind.
There are the elected judgeships like you had, and then there's also appointed ones like the Supreme
Right.
Court.
Right.
It doesn't make a difference, really. Does either system tend to reflect diversity more, or?
I think it does make a difference. Different presidents, Lyndon Johnson and Carter, did a great deal in adding blacks to the at least district court bench, not as much on the appellate courts. So I think it is a little easier. You have one man, if he is dedicated to the idea of having a diverse judiciary in their lifetime appointments, your Article III judges. So you do have a better chance. On the state level, it tends to be so local with local prejudices and wants. In Ohio, we were talking about there's a name game going on, seats constantly being taken by guys with the same name. And a lot of people in elected places don't know who the judges are. When you have 40 judges on the Common Pleas Court bench, the odds you don't know who they are, what they represent, because they can't say anything really profound in their campaigning other than I will be fair and impartial. You don't know about their background. It's a difficult thing to do.
All of this said, given your experience, what do you think that some African-American judges can bring, first of all, in the courtroom dealing with people who are accused of crimes, but secondly, among their colleagues?
I think they can bring a number of things. The one thing I think is most important is if they're just more black faces back there. I know everybody's going to think, well, that's just a dumb idea. But you have a section of society that feels totally alienated from the judicial system. We are overrepresented on the defendant side. If you run into a wall of white when you come to the justice system, you don't feel like you're involved in a place where maybe you did something wrong and you're involved in a community having to deal with you. It's us against them. Us as colleagues, I remember I spoke to a room of 100 judges. I was on a judicial committee for the education of judges. And my suggestion to them was that they did not understand. It was called the Many Faces of Justice. And there was one little table of black judges and everybody else was white. And I said, you can't think that this is okay. And you have to learn about the cultural realities of where you live, how differently they speak, how black people might have a different view of what's going in and how they might think, as many do, I'm dead on arrival and as such I should go down with a little bravado, and how you need to extend yourself further to those who may not believe that the system is fair, because belief in the fairness of the system is a necessary component to its performance.
Given that judges do have discretion in a lot of cases about, for example, whether or not someone can get a misdemeanor as opposed to a felony, do you think this really is affecting who's in prison right now?
Well, first you have to realize the first person who deals with whether there's a felony or a misdemeanor is the prosecutor, and it's prosecutorial discretion as to what they get charged with. A judge has no control over that. They can work out a deal or in a preliminary hearing reduce a charge, whatever. But the prosecutorial discretion is what most people don't see. That tends to be skewed a great deal. So by the time it gets to a judge's, a big chasm may have already arisen about the level of charge that's been leveled on a particular individual.
Judge Toler, who's going to fix this?
We all have to fix it. And we have to fix it by being conscious of what's going on before it goes on. When I went to classes after I was a judge, I was elected a judge, I said, if you remember nothing else I tell you today, when you're 18, you vote and you register to vote, because it does make a difference. 6 votes in my race. We have to be conscious of the judges, one. And number two, I think we have to change judicial education. When I took the bench, I was 34 years old. They put me on a robe, sat me in the chair and said, have at it. They did not ask me to think back about, you know, how do you judge credibility? How do you interpret different cultural realities? What do you do in circumstance when you're trying to split the baby? None of that occurred. And until judicial education catches up with the notion that, you know, putting on the robe does not presume an absence of humanity, then we're in the short run going to have continued difficulties just on that basis.
Judge Toler, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That was Judge Lynn Toler. She's a former municipal court judge who now presides over TV's divorce court, and she's also a regular News and Notes contributor. She joined us from KJZZ in Tempe, Arizona.